know, North Carolina does not claim Asheville. Neither does Tennessee. I think they need to create their own state over there.
You may want to. We got a roll.
All right, my friend. It's good to talk to you. Have a wonderful, wonderful evening.
Colonel, you're welcome anytime. Take care.
All right.
Bye now. And we're over the limit, and we're over time. And Strictly Confidential is next. And I thank you, Agnes. And I thank Ben Birch and the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and RMR. Gina, it's all for you. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Gather around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to verse 14, chapter 14, page 14, and book 14 of Strictly Confidential, the GLBT shot heard around the world. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. The show website is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you'll find links to all of the guests as well as to our chat room, and links to the Head On Radio Network main site, where you can find out about all of the progressive programming on the network. Again, the link for that is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. The call-in lines will be using 304-658-5912. That rings in West Virginia. I heard that the Comrex might be arriving back from the factory next week. That'll be great news, which will provide our toll-free lines again. But for right now, we're using 304-658-5912. Email comes in to peter@headonradionetwork.com, and I normally try to check the emails during the break. Thank you for all of the kind and supportive emails, and thank you, too, for the guest referrals. We're working on all of them. You are appreciated, and we do pay attention to you. In fact, tonight's guest was by request from one of our listeners. You know, this week we've had the Reverend Nancy Wilson, Reverend Elder from MCC. We've had Jimmy Creech of Faith in America on the show. I was honored to have them as guests, and I feel exactly the same way about tonight's guest, who will join us shortly. Francis DiBernardo is a doctoral candidate in English at the University of Maryland at College Park, and the executive director of New Ways Ministry, a national Catholic educational gay lesbian ministry organization. He's taught writing courses at the University of Maryland, where he's served as director of the Writing Center. Mr. DiBernardo has spoken at workshops and conventions around the country on religion and gay issues, has an undergraduate degree in English from the Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut, and he's worked as a reporter for The Tablet, which is the Diocesan newspaper of Brooklyn, New York. And I am so pleased to welcome Francis DiBernardo to the show. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Peter. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here, too. Since I first heard about you, you even came up when we were talking with Nancy Wilson the other evening, and she was aware of you. I'm not sure if she said she had met you or not, but she certainly knew of your organization. And name came up, one of our listeners is a member of your organization. And I've got to tell you, I've been looking through the scant material that I have, and apparently you guys have been around a long time. Is it 1977? Is that right?
That's correct. We're celebrating our 30th anniversary this year. So 3 decades of trying to build bridges in the Catholic Church between the hierarchy and its gay and lesbian members.
Well, that's I understand too that you're also the go-to source for information regarding gay and lesbian issues within that you're actually analyzing all of the Vatican documents on homosexuality. Good Lord, that's got to be a chore.
Well, we were founded in 1977 by two visionary people, a priest and a nun, Father Robert Nugent and Sister Janine Gramick. And they started the organization in 1977, but had been working in ministry with lesbian and gay people for 6 years previous to that, from 1971. And over that 6 years, what they found the greatest need in the Catholic Church was that there needed to be education, and that homophobic practices and policies needed to be identified, and strategies for eradicating it needed to be put into place. So they, it was their vision that we are trying to continue, which is analyzing church policies and documents, helping church leaders who are positive about lesbian gay issues and lesbian gay people, helping them to do more effective pastoral ministry, both with their gay parishioners, gay people who come to their parishes, and importantly with their heterosexual parishioners, because the only way to truly eradicate homophobia is to do education among and discussion among the non-gay population in the church as well.
I completely agree with you. Among our listeners, we have a large number of straight listeners, and they're progressives and very interested in our cause, but they don't know us, and this is no fault of their own. They're exposed to the same media that everyone else is exposed to, the you know, the rowdiness and pride parades and the characterizations you see on various television shows, and it's just amazing to me what's been happening since this program started. The reaction I'm getting from people who are now just seeing us as normal everyday people, a lot of them are shocked. It's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. We've always found that the greatest change in policies and practices come mostly when people have a chance to have face-to-face encounters with lesbian gay people, with people who are sitting next to them in the pews in their church, or who are sharing religious education classes. And when people become aware that lesbian gay people aren't outside of the church, but are right there in the church and already
faith-filled people. Excellent point, because actually nothing is really changing. We're already there sitting in the pew. I'm in church every Sunday. I'm sitting in the pew next to somebody.
Exactly.
We're already in the military. Yes, nothing changes. It's just that you explain it.
Uh-huh. Right, but you know, sometimes the you know, we get calls from parishes that say, how do we attract lesbian gay people to come to our church, or how do we reach out to them? And we always say, well, maybe you have to do some in-reach first, you know, rather than outreach. Maybe more than likely you have lesbian gay people sitting in your pews, sitting at your church functions, but who aren't comfortable or don't feel safe yet to let that be known. And so we feel that, you know, an important part of what we call lesbian gay ministry in the Catholic Church is helping those straight parishioners to overcome their fears of homosexuality and lesbian gay people, and so that they can create environments where people will feel comfortable to let their sexuality be known. You know, it's in the Catholic Church, as in many churches, but I know the Catholic scene better than than the others. You know, we've, you know, back in the 1970s, the U.S. bishops started to write a document about black Catholics, and they, as they were drafting it, they were told, you know, don't write the document about black Catholics. Write the document about racism, because black Catholics are not the problem. Racism is the problem that you need to be analyzing in the church. And I think, you know, that's something that we constantly try to emphasize in our ministry, is that gay and lesbian people aren't the problem in the church. It's the homophobia that exists that is the problem.
Well, it affects all of us, both gay people and heterosexual people, straight people, because I'm recalling the scripture. I can't remember which parts of the body, but it's the hand cutting off the nose because it says you're not valuable, or the foot. I'm sure you know the reference I'm talking about. And actually, we are part of the body of Christ, and it affects us through disenfranchisement and the pain of being alone. And not having anyone to really to share our inner selves with because of the risk. And it affects the straight folks because so much time and energy is invested in preventing us. And it's something that simply cannot be prevented. And if that energy could be channeled into positive things, for instance, well, helping the homeless or just helping each other, or working on the worship committee, or any number of things in a church, if that energy could be rechanneled, the world would change. I think it would change quickly.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to tell you a little story about a parish that we consulted with who wanted to do outreach to lesbian gay people, and we met with the committee and we told them, well, the first thing you need to do is educate yourselves and to be serious about that education. So before you have any kind of program or outreach, you should spend a year reading, discussing church documents, research from the scientific and social scientific community. You should have conversations with lesbian gay people. And when we gave them that assignment to do that, and, you know, we were going to help them with that, there was one gentleman on the committee who was not too keen on this. And he said, you know, I don't even know why we have to do this. Everyone is welcome in our church, you know, and we don't have to make special welcomes to special people, to special groups of people. You know, if gay and lesbian people want to come, they can come to the church. And when we went back a year later after they did their discussion and education, and we were talking with them, evaluating the program, this one gentleman said, you know, he said, I know that when we first started, that I was reluctant. He said, but what I've learned is that I had to go on this journey of confronting my own fears and my own ignorance. He says, even if not one lesbian or gay person walks through our doors, he said, I still needed to do that as an individual, and we needed to do this as a gospel Catholic community, a Catholic community based on the gospel. He said, because we aren't a full community if we still maintain these fears and prejudices. So I thought that was very telling, that you know, even if lesbian gay people don't show up in church, you know, the heterosexual people still have a responsibility to confront those fears and prejudices.
I think that's a very powerful point, especially you're using the word fears, because, you know, that same degree of fear that exists on that side of the fence about us extends to our side too, because we live in fear of well, maybe not from Catholic, good Catholics, but the fear of somebody just railing on us verbally. So we're so afraid of each other. This and it's this awkward truce that exists. This just can't go on.
Mm-hmm. There is a lot of fear. I'll tell you a humorous, just a quick little humorous story that I heard. I was talking with a gay Catholic man a few years ago who was telling me about coming to, who had been known in the community. He was known in the community as being gay for many, you know, for a good number of years. And when his parish started a support group, he said he was very nervous about going to that support group. And I asked him, why were you nervous if people already knew that you were gay? And he said, I wasn't afraid that people were going to find out I was gay. He said, I was afraid I was going to meet some gay friends who were going to know that I was Catholic. And
that's priceless. Oh, that's priceless. Oh, jeez. That's a good one.
And I think that, you know, that story illustrates that there is, you know, that that gay people are in the closet, you know, when they're in churches, but that often, you know, religious people go into a closet when they're in the gay community because they know, you know, and you know, gay people have experienced some very negative attitudes and actions by religious people. So there is a bias against them, but that those fears have to be confronted too by the gay community. You know, to be more open.
What you're saying to, yeah, I completely agree, and this extends. Not just amongst being a closet Christian amongst the gay community, the progressive community as a whole is so traumatized and disgusted with the day from WorldNet Daily and Focus on the Family, the attacks and the distortion of the truth, that you can't say you can't say that in front of a lot of progressive people too without getting whacked either.
Yes, it's very true. And it's very sad that so many people have used religion to justify their own hatred. You know, that isn't true religion. You know, that isn't true religion when that happens.
I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you that, in fact, I think they have nothing. They seem to, the people who think and act that way, it seems to me they have nothing in their hearts, or at least they're not aware of the love of Christ and the difference it can make in your relating to other people. They seem to have nothing. I don't understand what motivates them to even go to a church. I don't understand them at all. Perhaps you have some insight into that.
I think. Well, I do think that part of it is. What we were talking about earlier, fear, you know, and that people often use religion to protect themselves against fear, you know, and fear is a very human experience. You know, we all have fears, and it sometimes can be very paralyzing. But I think that when, you know, and one of our greatest fears is our fears of being rejected and of not being loved and of not being intimate with someone. So I think it's not a coincidence that, you know, that often the greatest hatred manifests itself in religious people around sexuality issues, because that is the place where people often feel most vulnerable. You know, we feel vulnerable about our health. We feel vulnerable about our you know, incomes. We feel vulnerable about our you know, ability to be independent, maybe. But I think one of the most basic fears is that fear of not being loved, of not being intimate with someone. And so I think it's not a coincidence that most of the hatred, you know, motivated by fear, comes out against people, against sexuality, you know, or focuses around sexuality. You know, I just heard this week, not a Roman Catholic, but an Anglican Catholic bishop, Bishop John Shelby Spong, speak, and he said, he said he feels that the problem with religion, I thought this was very accurate, he said the problem with religion today, institutional religion, is that it's trying to it appeals too much to certitude and not to faith. You know, faith is the risk. You know, you only have faith you only make that act of faith, that act of belief, when you're not sure of something. You know, and doubt is not the enemy of faith. You know, fear truly is the enemy of faith. And when you fear something, then you cling to some, then you find something to cling to, you know, and that clinging is certitude. And when you become so certain and so solid and so cemented in a belief, it's very, very difficult to free yourself from that. And I think that that's where
I'm very impressed with that.
Religious conservatives are right now. I'm sorry.
Well, that's well said. That the person that you're quoting there, that is very well said. That's what have stood out in my mind too.
You know, because I think, you know, I often think of you know, there's a verse in Galatians in one of the Christian scriptures that says, you know, that talks about the unity of the church, and it says, you know, in the church, in Christ, there's neither Greek nor Jew, slave nor free, male nor female. You know, and I heard a theologian explain that once, and said, you know, that in the early days of the church, there was a big debate between whether Greek people could become Christians. You know, or did you have to be Jewish? You know, could slaves become Christian, or did you have to only be a free man, and could women be Christian? And I think that the church has confronted those divisions. You know, in the early days of the church, the Greek, neither Greek nor Jew. In America, it was slave nor free in the 19th century. In the 20th century, you know, it's neither male nor female. We had to confront that in our practices and our beliefs. And I think now in the 21st century, we're looking at neither gay nor straight. You know, who is welcome in the church? Who is able to be a church member? And I think that that's the issue of that the people, the church people of our time, have to deal with. You know, and just as church people throughout history dealt with other issues as well. You know, the idea that we are in a church that's filled with controversy may not be a comfortable thing, but it certainly isn't a new thing.
Well, I have a huge smile on my face from here. That I hadn't heard it put that neither gay nor straight. I hadn't heard it phrased that way. It's such a it's something that should have occurred to any thinking person, but somehow it just never occurred to me that that's a wonderful way to look at it. Wondering about the... Go ahead, sir.
I was going to say, I think so, too, you know, sort of, I mean, this may not be may not be politically correct, but, you know, sort of in defense of the conservatives, and I'm not defending them, you know, totally, but, you know, in terms of understanding them, is that we've only, as a culture in America, been dealing with lesbian gay issues openly, you know, in the last 40 years, and really, truly in the last maybe 10, 15, you know, that it's in the paper every day, and you know, in our conversations and in our political discussions. So I think that we, you know, as a nation and as a culture, we still have a long way to go, as well as in the church. You know? So it is still, I think... You know, I feel sympathy. Maybe that's a better way of saying than defending, you know, the conservatives. I feel sympathy for them because I just don't think they've had the opportunities to expand their minds in a way that helps them as well as help, you know, the lesbian gay community.
It is true. They're so locked into. Their their the leadership of the church. It's a lot of times we refer to them as sheeple here, because they seem to not to process anything on their own. It's only what comes from the pulpit, and quite frankly, in these large conservative mega churches, that's about money, as best I can tell. Even the ex-gay movement seems to be about raising money. We had some audio we played a few nights ago, some people from the ex-gay movement, the ex-ex-gay movement, and there was a fellow talking about he had spent, thousands of dollars on travel, $500-$600 on books, $50,000 on housing for and being in this institute. It seems like it's all based around getting the money in it. It has very little to do, and it's a shame that people are trapped in that.
Yes, I think that you know, it is just a trap, I think, that people fall into, and I think they sometimes don't realize the traps that they're falling into. You know, it's our just our human blindness, I think, that does that to us.
It's good to hear your perspective. I'll be perfectly honest with you. We do this sort of, we pass out this information. All of the shows do, not in my particular way. All of the shows in the network are progressive programming, and we talk about, you know, our general areas of interest. But we're so angry, I've got to tell you, that to hear somebody that shows a little love in that direction toward the conservatives, It's refreshing, but you know, I don't exactly know how to head around it. But it's welcome.
Well, you know, I myself have had to come through, you know, understanding homosexuality, you know, and that's why the people I speak to, you know, I've seen so many lives turned around that, you know, I realize that you don't get. You know, you don't change hearts and minds, you know, by trying to force someone to see something. You know, to me, and again, it's the gospel, you know, when Jesus calls the apostles in the gospel, he doesn't say, you have to get over here and start doing things. He says, well, come and see where I live. You know, it's always an invitation. It's always a gentle invitation. And I think that that's, you know, in working with people who don't yet understand that gay and lesbian people are equal members of the church, you know, that the same gentle invitation has to be given to them. And the same gentle invitation to them to work beyond their fears. You know, and that's something that, you know, I've had to confront many fears in my life, and I know that I've only been able to confront them, you know, with whatever they were by, you know, a gentle.
I'm getting the impression that among the Catholic Church, there's a huge number of progressive, if I dare use the word, are like-minded people that are not particularly thrilled about things like this. The Pope are just appointing this guy, you know, Keeler just, and the Pope has just appointed O'Brien, which he was the guy, I think, who went on the witch hunt a while back,
right,
looking for evidence.
Right.
Right. And how does your organization address political, this, and to me this is, I'm calling it political because to me that's how it feels. How do you address these political slaps in the face from Rome?
Uh-huh. Well, we believe, you know, and this is good Catholic theology. This comes from the documents of the Second Vatican Council that, you know, that the church is the definition of the church from the Second Vatican Council, which was a Vatican meeting of all the bishops from 1962 to 1965. And the 16 documents that came out of that are like the new constitution of the Catholic Church. But in those documents, the definition of the church was changed to the pilgrim people of God. You know, that we are the people of God on a journey. and that we need to be open to the world. You know, that was the big change from the fortress mentality of the earlier days of Catholicism.
Yes,
and
yes.
And so when, you know, when we look at the, you know, when people say, oh, the Catholic Church is against homosexuality, you know, I can understand where that comes from, because the hierarchy and the church leaders, certainly from the Vatican and from many of the U.S. bishops, have a negative view of homosexuality and of lesbian gay people. But we see the grassroots, and we see the people who we call the middle managers, pastors and heads of religious communities of men and of women. We see Catholic colleges, we see people in diocesan offices, all who have a much healthier, much holier, and much more open outlook towards lesbian gay people. If I can give you just, you know, a quick little statistic, the you know, we keep a list of and we publish it four times a year, constantly updated, of lesbian, of gay-friendly parishes, meaning parishes that are open to lesbian gay people that have, 10 years ago when we started that list, we had 20, parishes in the U.S. that we knew of. And now we have close to 200.
Wow.
So it has.
And you're not counting things like, Dignity? Yeah. You're not counting Dignity or anything like that?
Not counting Dignity. These are Catholic parishes who have either some, mention in their mission statement that all are welcome regardless of sexual orientation, or a gay and lesbian ministry program, or that gay and lesbian issues are regularly discussed in all of their church programs. So, yeah, still, you know, from 20 to 200 in 10 years, that is good. You know, there are thousands of Catholic parishes in the U.S., so there's still a lot more work that needs to be done. But it does show that there is movement. This year, every 5 years, we have a national symposium for church leaders, and that routinely attracts over 500 church leaders, people involved in church ministry professionally, who want to come to learn more about gay and lesbian issues and the latest theological and scientific developments in those areas. There are 220 Catholic colleges in the country. Our list of gay-friendly Catholic colleges is over 70. So that's about a third of the Catholic colleges have some sort of program on campus, either a student group or official policies that are open to their supporting their lesbian gay students, their lesbian gay faculty and personnel. So we constantly see, you know, a lot of people sometimes say when they meet me, you know, in a non-professional setting, they'll say, you know, well, how do you stay positive in a, you know, working in a thing like, you know, for an organization.
Precisely
like
my question. How do you stay positive? Yes, yes, please tell me now.
You do stay
I'm begging you.
When you. Because, you know, day in and day out, I don't meet the bishops who are critical, and I don't meet the Vatican officials who are critical. Day in and day out, I'm on the phone and emailing and talking with people who are doing wonderful work on the grassroots, you know, and so I'm in a very privileged position of seeing positive things happening, you know, and you know, I get
very
to see the good things that people, you know, on the front lines of the church, where the church really matters, you know, in people's home communities, that, you know, that are doing good, and that are doing it in, you know, in the Catholic tradition of justice. You know, the Catholic Church has a very strong tradition of justice and welcome and tolerance. You know, there's the British Catholic writer G.K. Chesterton of the of the, he was British, you know, in the early part of the 20th century, who was a very witty man, and he said, when he said, the definition of the Catholic Church is, here comes everybody.
Oh, God, I hope so.
And that is, you know, it's especially in the 20th century Britain, where, you know, maybe the established church was a little more elitist. You know, the Catholic Church was the grittier, you know, church of the poor and the dispossessed. And there is a big tradition of that in the Catholic Church of identifying with, you know, with those who are marginalized.
Well, it's good to hear another perspective. We often don't hear it here. The news feeds are constantly full of the latest right-wing attack and the latest from WorldNet Daily, which is a constant smear campaign. So we don't always see the little increment. You know, in this part, the media does not cover it.
No,
the media simply. Yes, and it's you do not exist as far as the mainstream media is concerned, and even the progressive media. So we have to find people like you to hear anything
right.
any different. We have to search you out. Of course, you came recommended by one of our listeners, but nonetheless, we have to search you out. It's a shame the way people are just lied to, and they don't get it. They believe what they're hearing.
Exactly, and you know, Andrew Sullivan, who's is a gay writer and gay Catholic, he's Catholic as well, and sometimes writes on Catholic issues and more often political issues. He's a columnist in Time magazine. He said in one of his articles, maybe about 10 years ago, he challenged the gay political organizations for their anti-religion stand. You know, and that they weren't doing enough for the progressive religious people and the progressive religious groups in the gay movement. And he pointed out, again, a historical fact, you know, that every civil rights movement in the United States only became successful when religious groups got involved, whether that be the abolition movement, which started in the churches, you know, the civil rights movement in the 60s, which started in the churches, and yet the gay movement has shunned the churches, you know, politically.
That's a very, very good point. It's a very good point because, recently, and we've just had a lot of gay pride parades, and I don't recall if it was New York or if it was Chicago, but it was New York. I recall it now. The Focus on the Family and some of the other groups along those lines were outraged that churches, name churches small, we're talking about, you know, were at the head of the Pride Parade march, and they were going on about how the homosexuals had co-opted the church, blah, blah, blah. Of course, they're all upset about it. But yes, that to me is remarkable. It was unthinkable. I'm 54, so I had a pet dinosaur, but, you know, it's just unthinkable to me when I was younger that this could ever happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it is amazing when you see the churches involved, and you know, and I think it's important always to remember too that, you know, whether it's in the church or in politics, or you know, whether it's politics on the local level or the federal level or wherever, change always comes from the ground up. You know, any real and lasting change, you know. As people, you know, there's the old axiom of you can't legislate morality. You know, if you try to pass a law to get people to act more morally or nicer to each other, it's not going to happen if it comes from the top down. But if it comes from the grassroots up, where I think all real change happens, it always is a much more lasting change. And I think we're seeing that in society with gay issues, and I think particularly we're seeing it in the church, that even though we still get rants from the Vatican and from American bishops, at the grassroots there is this groundswell that's happening. And, you know, I always think of the old saying of you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. You know, once it's out there,
yes.
You know, that's... And again, Catholicism, maybe more so than other Christian denominations, does have this tradition that they take not just teaching, not just scripture, but practice. You know, how did the people receive the teaching? How did the people put that teaching into practice? And what we've seen in the gay movement in the church is that the Catholic people have put the social justice teachings of the Catholic Church, the teachings that say all people, regardless of any feature of difference to them, are born with dignity. All people need to be treated equally. And they've applied all of those, they've applied those teachings and other social justice teachings to their gay and lesbian brothers and sisters. You know, one of the areas that we work with a lot, or one of the groups that we work with a lot at, in our ministry, are parents, you know, and parents of lesbian gay people. And we've seen that, you know, if, again, in the Catholic Church, these are people who, you know, have been pillars of their church, of their local parish, you know, involved in committees and fundraising and activities, you know, and then they find out they have a gay or lesbian son or daughter, you know, and they go on a journey themselves. You know, they often, as has been said, you know, when the child comes out, the parents go into the closet. You know, they often don't want to tell anyone at first, but then they work through their emotions and their thinking, and we find that parents have become what we call the prophets in the church. You know, that just like the prophets in the Old Testament, you know, none of the prophets in the Old Testament wanted to be called as a prophet. You know, God calls them and says, you know, go preach to my, you know, to these wayward people. And all
so
the prophets,
true. Nobody wanted to hear that. That's
right.
So true. No, all the prophets. No,
right.
No, why me, Lord?
Go pick someone else. Don't take me. You know, I don't want to be the one. And, you know, that's very similar to what happens. You know, most, you know, a lot of parents will say, you know, why me? Why did I have to have the gay child or the lesbian child? But when they come to, you know, when they come to terms with that, they really become, you know, the image that we use in our ministry, the bridge, because they, the natural love that they have for their children is what binds them to them, regardless of what happens to them. It's that unconditional love that we say is the love of God is really there in a parent's love. So I think that the parents in the churches are really the prophets, not just because they didn't want to be called, but because they're going to teach the rest of the church how to go on this journey of acceptance. You know, it's the journey that they went on, and they're going to say, you know, I did it. I learned, you know, that this child of mine is still the child that I loved all those years. That their journey is going to instruct the rest of the church. And so I think, you know, that's where the change is going to happen. Not the change isn't going to happen from the Vatican. You know, it's going to happen from the grassroots.
It'll have to come from people like yourself who are working with churches who have I hate to say open hearts, open minds, which is the Methodist slogan, which they don't always live up to that. I'm a Methodist, I could get away with saying that. But you understand, for instance, a huge number of gay kids are thrown out on the street by Mormon families who find out, and amongst the more Pentecostal members of the family, their kids often get put in some sort of a therapy program or conversion therapy. So but you know that this is only what's being reported. You know somewhere in those communities there are parents who stick with their kids, and that's got to be tough for the parents too, because in a sense they're at the same risk that the kid is amongst that community of Christians.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that I have to say that I find that very difficult, and I'm not toting the Catholic flag on this, but it is. I think, and I don't know this specifically, but that's not as true in the Catholic community, at least in the United States. And I think the reason is because the Catholic community, you know, is often more ethnically oriented, with family unity, you know, regardless if, you know, Uncle Joe is an alcoholic and Aunt Susie takes drugs or sleeps with too many men, you know, that you're still the family. You know, you're still the family unit. And so I think that in the Catholic Church, you don't find as many situations where they ostracize their gay or lesbian son. They may not be very friendly to them for a while.
Yes.
They may not be very friendly to them for a long time, you know. But it's less cases, I think, of people being thrown out into the street or, you know, totally abandoned.
Well, listen, I have a question for you. It comes from our chat room. We have an active chat room. I don't recommend guests go into it because you'd be bombarded with questions.
Right.
You wouldn't be able to talk to me. Any other time, I encourage you to stop in. But we have a question asking you about the movie you were in with Sister Janie Grimmick, I believe. It's called In Good Conscience. You were in a movie?
Yes.
Nobody tells me these things.
Not a wide release movie. It was a documentary that an independent filmmaker, her name is Barbara Rick, from New York City. She runs a company called Out of the Blue Films, and she was back in 2000. She was so moved by hearing the story of Sister Janine's ministry while she was working part-time for a news program that she wanted to make a film of her life and her work. And so for about 3 years, she and her film crew would follow Janine mostly, you know, but in following Janine, they often followed me as well. So they made this film, In Good Conscience, Sister Janine Grimmick's Journey of Faith, and it chronicles not only her ministry to gay people, but the difficulties that she had with the Catholic Church, with the Vatican, because of those because of that ministry, you know. And that's why she and her partner, Father Nugent, her ministry partner, really are our pioneers in the Catholic Church for developing ministry programs, and they've suffered because of that, as many pioneers do. They've suffered because.
Well, there's some powerful movies. I haven't seen this one, but I fully intend to. For instance, I recommended by someone in the chat room too. I saw a movie not too long ago called Priest, which was a powerful movie about a priest who's dealing with his homosexuality, and another movie called The Saint of 9/11, which was a powerful movie. It moved me to tears. He was a gay priest, and how he helped with all of the issues in New York City, and he was killed at 9/11. Have you probably seen those?
I haven't.
I think so.
Unfortunately, I haven't been able to see. I've seen the movie Priest, but I have not seen The Saint of 9/11 yet, and it's on my Netflix list, so I'm waiting.
Yes,
for
that's worse. Maybe you'll get the copy I had. That's where mine came from.
But Marvel's, but I do know the story of Father Michael Judge, and yes, he was a saint. He was a gay priest who was the chaplain to the fire department in New York, and so when the call came, when the towers fell on 9/11, he was one of the first people to rush in, and he is referred to as victim 001, the first victim of 9/11, because he died giving last rites to some firemen.
No, I was so touched with the movie. For instance, his funeral. He didn't hide the fact that that he was gay. And the firemen, all of were all New York City firemen carrying his casket, and it was all very, very powerful about how integrated into the community and just love, and how irrelevant the fact that he was gay. It was as it should be, and it just moved me to tears to see something, normal for a change.
Yeah.
And
I think it's important, and I think the title of the movie is great, The Saint of 9/11, because in the Catholic Church, you know, the idea of the saints so that they are almost like our superheroes, our models of virtue and of faith and of courage living the faith. And so I think it's important that we have a model of holiness and virtue of someone who's gay, who was openly gay. I mean, many of the saints, were gay or lesbian, although we don't discuss that often, and we, it was not recorded in history, but
God forbid.
So I think it's
just a joke.
I think it's important that we have this one who we do have documented evidence, that he identified as a gay man.
Wow.
And it was,
well, go ahead.
It was out of out of that, his experience as a gay man, that a big part of his ministry developed, his ministry of compassion and of understanding and of being sympathetic to people who suffer.
Well, how large is your organization? Do you have offices in the major cities, or you work in one central location
staff? One office in Mount Rainier, Maryland, which is right outside of Washington, D.C., and we maintain a small staff of right now we're four people, sometimes we're as large as five or six, and we do programs all over the country. We're not a membership organization, per se, but we're an educational ministry, so the people who work in the office plan the programs and then go out and do the programs around the
country. I see. So the organization then really isn't something else. It isn't an alternative to something like Dignity. Then it just goes hand in hand. In other words, it's not
exactly.
It's not a
For instance, the Sister Janine worked in the early days of New Ways Ministry in the 70s and worked very closely with Dignity, setting up many of the Dignity chapters. And we still continue to work closely with Dignity. We just have two different ways of being organized and two different missions towards the same goal.
And I might mention to our listeners who may not know what Dignity is, we had Nancy Wilson the other night, and I think you all understood what Metropolitan Community Church is. Well, Dignity is to Catholic, gay, and lesbians what MCC, or Metropolitan Community Church, is to Protestant, gays, and lesbians. Does that sound like a fair description to you?
Yeah, that's a pretty fair. I would say, but really, more accurately, is that they are a membership organization of gay and lesbian Catholics who are called to present an alternative voice to the Catholic Church from their gay and lesbian members. And our ministry is more, so they try to amplify the voice of gay and lesbian Catholics in the church. And our ministry is to be bridge builders between gay and lesbian Catholics and the wider church. So it's, we both are working for justice and equality for lesbian gay virtue.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm very proud of what you're doing. Growing up in the South, there are of course Catholics here, but growing up in the South, it's pretty much predominantly, in fact, it's Protestant. So it's not like in the Northeast or in other parts of the country where everybody just knows everything about Catholics, because probably you are one. I didn't know anything about it, but I do recall one thing. This will tell how old I am. When I was a kid, I remember when John Kennedy was elected president, and everybody was going about, he's Catholic, he's Catholic. And I was thinking to myself, well, what's that got to do with anything? It prejudices, sometimes it's it's good to not be amongst the masses because you don't pick up the same same wiring. I just had no idea that there was any problem with Catholics whatsoever. But apparently it was huge to some people. That, oh, my goodness, how times are changing. I want to tell you, too, that and as I've explained to the other two folks that I've mentioned to you earlier, you are absolutely welcome to use this program to get information out, to share with our listeners or you know, your organization, if you know, you have some of your people listening. You do not have to have a set interview time. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call us. Our 800 numbers should be back online and it will be published on the website by the middle of next week, I think. And I'll get you on the air because I want this program to be a conduit for people to verbally get out a message and add a voice, a real live human voice, to all of the text people see and read. But they don't hear us, though, unless it's a gay pride parade or a Mr. Leather contest or any number not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying that I'm very proud of you and what you're doing. I think your work is wonderful.
Well, thank you very much. And, you know, in Catholic theology, the word angel means messenger. So I thank you for your work and for being an angel, a true angel, by getting the message out and helping us to get messages out, you know, because that is
bless your heart. But I try so hard to maintain my evil, to maintain my evil. My audience, oh, they're all going to go away if they. But bless you for saying that. I feel the same way about you. I really do.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you, and
thank
you. It was a pleasure talking to you, too, and I appreciate your spending so much time with us. I think we've kept you on the phone for an hour, and that's very kind of you. And please pass the word in your organization that we're here and we're interested.
I will. I will do that. It's great to have this allies in the media. Thank you very much.
Well,
and thank
we are the progressive media
as well.
Thank you. And by the way, you're in the chat room. You were well received, and people were impressed with you. So it was good. And I intend to see you in good conscience.
Oh, great!
In conscience.
Put it on your Netflix
okay.
list. All right.
All right, sir. Oh, it is Netflix. Good, good. All right, sir. Good night, sir.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye. Wow. I tell you what, I just had some wonderful people to talk to over the last few days, and I'll tell you some of the people who are coming up. I've received email back from a transsexual, and she will be one of our guests soon. We have not set the date, but she's in California, and her name is Julia, and I'm sorry I don't have her last name in front of me, but I'm looking forward to that. Written several books. She has speaking engagements across the country, and she's a remarkable person, and I'm looking forward to having. And by the way, she came also by a referral from one of our listeners who wanted me to get in touch with her to have her on the program. So I can't find everybody by myself. So you can reach me, peter@headonradionetwork.com, peter@headonradionetwork.com. If there's someone you would like as a guest on the show, I will do my very best to have them here. And I think we're probably coming up on a top of the hour break. The telephone number is 304-658-5912, and I'll see you on the flip side of the news. I love you guys.
This is the Quality News Network. The White House today is scheduled to officially release the most recent progress report on the war in Iraq. The document says the Baghdad government has satisfactorily met 8 out of 18 political, economic, and security goals set as benchmarks by the U.S. On Capitol Hill, a Senate panel will hear details of a government sting designed to demonstrate weaknesses in the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's licensing system. Federal investigators were awarded a permit to receive enough radioactive materials to dirty bomb. The NRC says it has now closed the loopholes exploited in the undercover investigation. President Bush and senior national security officials will meet in Washington today to discuss a recent intelligence report that says al-Qaeda has strengthened its operating capabilities worldwide. The analysis says the terrorist group has found a safe haven in remote areas of Pakistan. Al-Qaeda today encouraged Pakistanis to rebel against the government of President Pervez Musharraf. The call to arms follows a battle between Pakistani troops and Islamic militants in Islamabad's Red Mosque compound. At least 80 were killed in the two-day siege, including a leading radical cleric. In southeastern Afghanistan, along the Pakistan border, a roadside bomb targeted a U.S.-led convoy today. 6 Afghan policemen were killed. Conducting a survey of Internet servers, the Associated Press reports, sensitive military information has routinely been posted online by government agencies and contractors. The data includes details of military facilities and programs related to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The Pentagon's Inspector General is criticizing the process by which 2 U.S. companies were awarded contracts for providing armored vehicles for U.S. troops in Iraq. The Defense Department report says troops were endangered because the companies failed to meet their delivery schedules. Competitive bids were not solicited for the multi-billion dollar contracts. Funeral services are pending for former First Lady Lady Bird Johnson following her death yesterday in Austin, Texas. She was 94. Gold is trading at $663.70 an ounce. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Stay tuned. Science and business are next.
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm washing my car. You want to help?
No, I don't want to be a polluter.
Whoa, I'm not polluting. I'm just washing my car.
If your car wash water is going down the street and into the bay, then you're a polluter.
Oh, really?
I'll help you clean this up, but what you should do next time is go to a local car wash.
And pay money?
Pay money for them to recycle the water and keep all that pollution out of the bay. I think it's really worth it.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
NOAA is poised to grant a 5-year extension to the Navy for use of low-frequency sonar employed to detect submarines. Environmentalists oppose the move, saying the technology harms whales, dolphins, and other marine mammals. A dozen scientists in a 41-foot raft have launched an expedition from New York to Spain in an attempt to prove Stone Age sailors could have successfully crossed the Atlantic Ocean. The journey is expected to take 2 weeks. The raft is made of reeds and wooden planks. Retail giants Walmart, Tyco, and Target have endorsed a newly established website designed to field reports of official corruption and bribery in the U.S. and abroad. Bribeline.org is operated by a Maryland-based nonprofit. The World Bank estimates bribery worldwide tops $1 trillion. Motorola announced it expects to disappoint Wall Street by posting a quarterly shortfall in revenues. The company cites slower-than-expected sales of its cell phones in Europe and Asia. General Electric has called off acquisition of Abbott Laboratories' diagnostic unit. Earlier this year, GE offered $8.13 billion for the deal. Light sweet crude is trading at $72.74 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Silver at $12.99 an ounce. There's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
And he's back. riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And I'm back. And I'm just as evil as ever, even though he called me an angel. Bless his heart. Last night we had that little meltdown. I attributed it to heat. And I promised you I was going to move the router into an air-conditioned room, but I didn't do that because I didn't have the right cabling or long enough links or what have you. So what I did was I just put a cooling fan on it. So it's still sitting in that sweltering room, but the fan seems to be working magic because we're still on the air. In spite of everything, we're still on the air. I was mentioning a guest that we have coming up, a transsexual woman, and we haven't set a date yet, but I do want to tell you we have set a date for this coming Monday's interview. We will have Shara Greer. She's with SLDN, that's the Service Members Legal Defense Network. She is one of the nation's leading experts on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and she's spoken on the gay ban before audiences all across the country. She's been on CNN, she's been on NPR, and she's going to be on Strictly Confidential. Can you believe that? So we're looking forward to having Shara on the show this coming Monday. And okay, this is all I'm going to do. You remember the other night we were talking about the toilet paper mayor. You know the mayor, Jim Nagle, the guy, you know, he wanted to put in the automated robotic toilets down in Fort Lauderdale because he claimed that the homosexuals were swamping them and they were just full of homosexuals. It was like a bathhouse and people were calling him left and right and the police are going, "What problem? What are you talking about? There's no, we're not seeing, no. And so then we found out that he's actually funded by the Kennedy guy from Carl Snake Ministries and along with some other plants in the city commission. But I told you, we talked about that, we went through all that, but remember I told you that there was a city council meeting coming up regarding the Stonewall Library, the Stonewall Gay and Lesbian Book Archive to be housed on city property. And I told you that it had cleared all of the hurdles. The library had approved of it and another group that needed to approve it. But anyway, it was at its last level of voting. They were asking that gay folks not go there and raise hell with him over the the toilet thing. People were mailing him rolls of toilet paper, by the way, simply because it was so important to get this this Stonewall Gay and Lesbian Book low through, and it went through. It passed. The commissioners voted 3-2 to approve the Stonewall Library. It has an extensive archive collection of videos, magazines, and it's going to move to the art space at Holiday Park. And it's supposed to be just fabulous. I'm looking, maybe I can get down there. Me and Doggy could use a little vacation. Nagle, the mayor, was very, very upset about this. And someone asked him why he kept using the word homosexual rather than gay or lesbian. And he replied, "Because they're unhappy." Oh, Jesus. He had not been talking to me, apparently. He was very, some of the titles on the library list that the city staff compiled. Well, some of the titles, one of them is 100% Beef, Arab Slave Boys, and Lesbian Bedtime Stories, none of which I'm ashamed of simply because we went to the Cosmos story last night with the marbles in the bed and the donut around his manhood. So, whatever. And anyway, Nigel was saying he had no idea that the book collection was blah, 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 blah. And it's just showing a pack of nude magazines. It's a shame it had to come out during this toilet controversy, he said. And then we have a Reverend O'Neill who's down there. He's an ultra-conservative church leader, and he was said he showed up at the meeting, and he said he was there to speak for God. Where do these people get off thinking that God needs them to speak for him or her or them? It just amazes me. God does not need your help, sir. But at the end of his rant, he said he loves the homosexual. Remember we talked about the 15 steps to writing the anti-gay pamphlet? At the end, he has the full-on closing, just like we said. He said he loves the homosexual people and considers them precious. And he said, "I even have homosexuals in my church, and they're trying to get their lives straight. Blah, 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 blah." You know, he said God's against homosexuals. He did all this at the meeting. So finally he ran out of time, and they had to make him sit down. And then another fellow got up and he said, Well, that's one thing I have to agree with. I agree with the Reverend. I love homosexuals too. Of course, he was a gay guy. And so anyway, they did approve that, and that's a wonderful thing for Fort Lauderdale. So the Noggle right-wing nutcase did not prevail. No, he did not prevail. But it has not been a good week, even though it's just not a good week at all for Republicans. Their family values are going to hell in a handbasket. First, we've got Senator David Vitter, and he's all hooked up with that D.C. madam down there, and he's heard her phone numbers in her list, and you know, the whole bit, and you know, he's just completely enmeshed. And then you've got you know, Robert Allen. We just talked about him. He's all messed up in the Well, no, we didn't talk about him, did we? We need to talk about him. We got a guy named Bob Allen. Now, a lot of you have heard about this. Now, he's a real Florida restroom crew. This is who Nodgel should be worried about. This is the man that, and he's a family values Republican. Yes, he is. He is a Florida state representative, and he is, of course, a Republican. And his name is Robert Bob Allen, and he's in trouble for offering to pay a police officer $20 to blow him. Hell, we're an adult audience. I'm not going to mince around with the words like everybody else is. It's not a sex act. He wanted to blow him. Okay, so he is a veteran Republican state legislator, and he was arrested by the authorities in Brevard County on charge that he solicited sex from a male undercover cop. Now, this guy, Allen, was first elected to the state house in 2000, and he told the a news station down there that after his arrest, it's a very big misunderstanding. It's a gross mistake. And, you know, of course, there are newspapers. According to the newspaper, here's how it played out. Allen was seen. This is not according to anybody. There's a whole gang of police. There was a bunch of police officers there. Every one of them has the, you know, he's guilty of sin, or he's guilty as a Republican wanting to play with the lollipop. But anyway, Allen was seen by the police going in and out of the bathroom at a park in Titusville at least three times. And after the time he went in, Allen asked a male undercover cop if he could perform, well, I'll use the correct word, oral sex on him for $20. Now, doesn't that just sound like a Republican? $20? Good Lord, you should have at least offered him $50. You people are so freaking cheap. You know, I'm surprised you didn't offer him minimum wage. It just never ceases to amaze me. Anyway, Allen had planned to run for the state Senate seat held by another Republican, whatever. He's already raised $24,000 toward that effort. So anyway, what happened was Allen was arrested at 3:30 in the afternoon at a place called Veterans Park along Broad Street in Isville. And what happened was the police department crime suppression unit was there, and they noticed the car. It was Allen's leased Toyota Avalon, and it kept going back and forth, looking for love in all the wrong places, and back and forth. By the way, he's married with a teenage daughter. Oh, I forgot to tell you that. Oh, yes, married with a teenage daughter. But are you surprised? Are you at all surprised? I believe the D.C. Madam guy, he was married with a teenage daughter. In fact, we heard her earlier doing commercials for the guy on Bob's show. So anyway, he's going back and forth, and three undercover officers are watching him. He parked his car, and he goes into the bathroom, and he leaves the bathroom, into the bathroom, and he does this three times. So finally, one of the undercover officers went into the bathroom and went into a stall. And so this representative, this Republican Family Values representative, he started talking to the officer through the wall of the stall, and offered him $20 to perform oral sex on him, and you know, just as cheap as you can be, like I said. And according to police at the time, they didn't know he was a state legislator, but pretty much what they did was Allen escorted him out, or rather the police officer escorted him out, and the other police officers there arrested him. He keeps saying it's a major misunderstanding, and he says it's disgusting. And his bail was set for $500, and of course he paid it. Now, Allen is a Little League volunteer, and he also donates his time to the Boys and Girls Club. He serves on their board of directors. He's married, and I think I said that he has a teenage daughter. I'm repeating myself as I scan some of this stuff. He was born in 1958, so he's He's not quite as old as me, and he lives in Brevard County since 64. He went to the University of Central Florida and Florida State University right here in Tallahassee. And he told Florida Today, it's a magazine, in 2004, seeking re-election to continue the positive direction and successes we've achieved during my first two terms. And he also says, with you behind me, I will continue to stand up against the special interests and the lobbyists who are backing my opponent and blah, 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 who want them to do their bidding instead of representing you, blah, 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 blah. Oh, and by the way, he's serving as a chair on the House Energy Committee. And get this, he is the co-chair of Senator John McCain's presidential campaign. So that's completely flushed. It was already in spin cycle. So now that's got to be over. Allen said he was drawn to McCain because of his record of the military. I fully understand that, honey. I can't resist a man in uniform either. The governor has not commented on it at this point in time. Charlie Crist, our gay governor, which is not officially gay, of course. Republicans could never admit he's a Republican. He's our gay governor. It's the happiest state of all. Has not made any comment on this. It was a burglary detail there that was at the park. They noticed him going in and out. They weren't having any troubles there either. But they noticed this unshaven guy going in and out. So anyway, he says to the media, I'm not associated with this in any way. What, they're disgusting. It's not true. It's not true. Now, interesting fact number one. Allen is the author of Florida House Bill 1475, which is the Lewd or Lascivious Exhibition Act, which would have made public masturbation in the presence of another adult, whether the adult consented or not, illegal. Now, Florida law already covers that behavior when a minor is present, but gee, doesn't it sound like to me that he would have violated the Lewd or Lascivious Exhibition Act? But, you know, he's a Republican. They do these things. They sponsor these bills they can't live up to. Here's an interesting fact, too. He was, although I've told you he's the co-chair of John McCain's Florida campaign, he lists his interests. You know, this is like one of those forms like, you know, I live so-and-so in my lovely world. He lists his recreational interests. Well, his recreational interest is, wait for it, water sports. Yes, praise Jesus. He has recreational interest is water sports. Also, number three, he told the right-wing Christian site World Nut Daily that his Sexual Predators Elimination Act, he was after that. He tried to get that through, too. Or he may have. I didn't completely pursue that. It sought mandatory life without parole sentences for those designated as sexual predators. He said, we can get away from all this expensive law enforcement, and we'll just take the offender and lock him up, a place we're safe. And it was opposed. Oh, here we go. It was opposed by the ACLU, but it didn't pass. And you're going to love this. In Central Florida, there is a group called the Rainbow Democratic Club. Now, the Rainbow Democratic Club rates politicians using their unique scale. It's called, wait for it, the Wizard of Oz scale, and they rank Bob Allen as a wicked witch. Oh, God, I love gay people. They're so funny. So he has a wicked witch rating from the Wizard of Oz scale from the Central Florida Rainbow Democratic Club. You got to love that. And the wicked witch status, by the way, is translated, that is meaning absolute worst of the worst. So there you have it. But, you know, he's not completely obsessed with sex, though. Allen co-sponsored a bill called the Guns in the Parking Lot Bill. It was officially House Bill 1417. And what that bill did was they referred to it as the Individual Personal Private Property Protection Act. And what it was for was to prohibit businesses, now check this out, to prohibit businesses from banning customers and employees from keeping guns in their parked cars. Yes, that's what I said. He was working with the NRA to prevent businesses from preventing people with guns in their cars from parking in their parking lots. Isn't that just special? Just special. So, you know, that's kind of the story in the nutshell, but there's more. Oh, you knew I was going to do more. You know I wasn't going to drop it there. Oh, no, 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 no. I have an exclusive Head On Radio Network, strictly confidential presentation, and it's called Bob Allen the Musical. Hit it, Agnes.
They had no idea who he was. None of the officers recognized him. One of the officers recognized his activity as being consistent with something we've seen in the past when someone's going to solicit someone for prostitution. That's one of the reasons why the officers went in that bathroom, and sure enough, that's exactly what he did. The officers were not there for a prostitution sting. They were there for another type of sting. Basically, we had a lot of burglary.
What were you doing in the park?
I helped build that park.
If you build it, he will come.
What were you doing in the park?
I helped build that park.
If you build it, he will come.
But until I heard the voice, I'd never done a crazy thing in my whole life.
And I have a strong interest in it, and I was looking at it.
Searching and seeking, never sleeping. I've got to find me a man.
But until I heard the voice, I'd never done a crazy thing in my whole life.
Searching and seeking, never sleeping. I've got to find me a man, man, man. I want no disguises, just surprises. Someone who I'll understand.
Searching, looking for love, all the time I can.
And I was saying that, you know, God rewards those who wait. I was going to be a Republican caught in a bathroom in my future. I just knew it. And that song was tailor-made for it, honey. I saved that one. That is the Republican. That I may not play it, you know, through again. That was a huge hit, by the way. That was Hazel Dean, by the way. That was called the USA Remix. And fabulous dance track and all the gay clubs. And all the gay guys just loved it. And I have a caller, and it is Jim, and I'm glad to talk to you this evening. Welcome aboard, Jim.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
I'm just fine. I'm celebrating Search and Looking for Love Night. How are you doing?
Well, let's hope you're not looking for love in a looking glass world, right?
Actually, I found love, and she's got four legs. And she's got some gray hairs around her chin, and I gave her every one.
That's the lyric of an old Brian Perry song back in the 70s. But what I wanted to share that was one of the methods by which I sort of got to know Bob and Agnes, because I think some of the songs that Brian Perry meant a lot to them. But what I wanted to share with you was the letter that I wrote last Christmas. And if you don't mind, I'd like to read it to you.
By all means. Yes, please do.
Yeah, this is a letter to the editor. And it says here, as we enter the Christmas season honoring the birth of the Prince of Peace, I hope that as a lifelong Democrat we can reconcile with our adversaries and extend our political capital in the following manner, expressed in the prayer made by St. Thomas More. Here's the prayer. Lord, grant that I may be able in argument, accurate in analysis, strict in study, candid in compliance, and honest with adversaries. Sit with me at my desk and listen with me to my client's complaints. Read with me in my library and stand beside me in court, so that today, in order to win my point, I will not lose my foe. May the spirit of this prayer be at the heart of lines of our elected representatives in our nation's capital.
Wow. That was a good letter to the editor. That went to which newspaper?
Several. Local.
And did they all publish it?
Oh, they did, yeah.
Way to go. That's well done. You know, did you get any hate feedback from that? Was there anybody who, how did people, you know, people always write back, and some wingnut has always got something evil to say, no matter what you do.
Not a single one. Not a single one.
That's great news. That's great news. That's great news. What made you write that at Christmas time?
Well, St. Thomas More has always been a hero of mine. When I first saw the movie, when I was like 21, the film A Man for All Seasons, directed by Fred Zinnemann, and Sir Thomas More was played by Paul Scofield. It was a stellar cast. Robert Shaw, Wendy Hiller, Susanna York. It was the most beautiful film I've ever seen.
Wow. Wow, and what the name of it again, please? I'm sorry, I lost it. There was a volume drop for just a second. What was the name again?
A Man for All Seasons.
Ah, yes. Yes, that always ranks right up there with what was the one Catherine Hepburn was in when she was the Queen of Aquitaine? Yes, and she had that marvelous line. They were walking toward the reception of the hall, and he said, "Woman, give me some peace." Said, "Peace? How about eternal peace?" those two movies, for some reason, I think of them kind of as a pair. They're both wonderful classics.
how they are. And but you have the courage that Sir Thomas More, St. Thomas More had. I only wish that I would have that type of courage in the situation that we keep us placed because of his belief.
Yes. Our guest was a person of courage too, and Jimmy Creech from last night. We've had some mighty brave people, and Reverend Elder Nancy Wilson too. You know, she left the Methodist Church and over her convictions, and you know that's not an easy thing to do. You know, there's a lot of pressure, and you know they try to cast you with ill repute, and you know our bravery is you know, different people express it in different ways, but. You know, I'm just so proud of our guests that we've had. Bravery is good. We need more of it in this screwed up world, don't we?
Yes, we do. And going back to that film, it was based on a play by Robert Bolt. And today I sent a letter, but not a letter, but this will be in my hometown paper. And it's a tribute to my mother. And I'd like to share that with you.
Great. Do that. Go ahead, Jim. Thank you. Do that.
Just one second, please. If God made the angels to reveal his splendor, the animals to their enemies, and plants to their simplicity, so made he man to serve him wittingly, with the rectangle of his mind. This my mother did for her entire life.
I know that you must miss her terribly.
Quite.
I remember when my mother passed away. It was very, very. It's very hard. That's a very close relationship, isn't it? It's one of the closest ones I know of.
It is, but. When I was thinking about that and reading the play by Robert Bolt, a play which the man for all seasons is saved, I thought about her. And I don't think I could pay any finer tribute to the person who gave me life.
Well, she must have been a very, very smart woman. She must have been a very intelligent woman because the acorn doesn't fall very far from the tree, does it?
Well, thank you. I will say this about her, though. She, at times, could be like Alice Longworth Roosevelt, and she would say to me, well, what did she say? Now, good Lord, I get so embarrassed, but if you don't have anything good to say about anybody, then please come and sit by me. She was.
Yes. Wonderful line. Wonderful light. There was another one. There was another one. I'm trying to remember. Go ahead, John.
I'm not trying to lionize her and guess beyond what she was in life, but she certainly had a significant knowledge base as far as the world and concerning people.
Yes, she apparently had quite a wit. I was thinking of. Something, I think it was in Washington, D.C. She said, if you took all the girls in Washington, D.C. and laid them end to end, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised.
That's true, because I used to live in D.C. I lived in D.C. for a number of years. And, yeah, you're right there. Men and women, I think.
apparently that's absolutely true,
but I appreciate your allowing me to share those things, but St. Thomas More has always been probably to me one of the greatest men who ever lived and always will be.
I don't know as much as I probably should know about all the saints, simply because not growing up Catholic, you know, they don't really teach us that. But as time goes by, I learn more and more about them. There were some wonderful people, weren't they?
Right. And you know,
wonderful, courageous people.
And I'm not Catholic, like I said the earlier on your program. I'm an Episcopalian and referred to commonly as God's frozen people. But you know, there's my approach to the whole thing is undermined by one word, and that is ecumenism. And as far as the current pontiff is concerned, I can't speak to him or speak anything about him, and I pray for him daily. But I do remember one pope when I was a young man in high school, and that was Pope John Paul III. He was truly a great man who initiated Vatican II and an effort to come together. And it seems as though the church is going in the opposite direction. And that makes me very sad.
Well, that's wonderful stuff. I know you're doing a lot of introspection. We all do when we lose someone close to us, and I sincerely hope you. Well, it's silly to tell someone I hope you feel better, but I just wish you well passing through this time. That's the best way to put it.
Well, as I said before, God would not deny anyone who was so blind to go to Him.
Well said.
Take care, my friend.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate your call, and have a good evening, sir.
You too. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. That's our good friend Jim from the undisclosed location in the eastern part of the United States of America. The telephone number here is 304-658-5912. Give me a whirl. I'm calling me now. I read your cards. Free screen. Have you ever noticed how women in the fundamentalist universe, they're like a holy uterus? You know, they exist for no other reason than to carry the holy uterus, and it has to be padlocked away. You know, it has to be guarded by the virginity pledges. You know, we talked about the chastity balls recently, which, if you haven't heard that story, it's a riot. We'll have to talk about chastity balls one night. But basically, it's instead of a prom, you go to this ball with your father and you promise chastity. And, you know, daddy puts his loving arms around the daughter and they exchange Jesus head rings. I hate to break it to the holy rulers, but, you know, among the 20% of kids that take that virginity pledge, 61% of them consistently pledge and pledge again, and 79% of those who don't consistently pledge over and over have been caught screaming loudly, having an orgasm with a member of the opposite or same sex. It's just amazing to me. The fundies, they never give up the fight, though. Every egg is precious, and every fetus is a potential addition to the heterosexual family fold. Yes, it is. And, you know, I'm waiting for, you know, them to come out with a line of Burkaware for today's modern women, because you can't expose any flesh, especially the boobie. Oh, no, you must not expose the boobie. Now, that has a terrible effect on fundamentalist men. You know, that can cause one of those potentially fatal four-hour boners, like, you know, the Viagra commercials. You know, so the boobie can be fatal to fundamentalist men. So fear of boobie, it's reached such a fever pitch that, you know, even women who are nursing in public, they've been equated with urinating and defecating and gasp, even masturbating. So, and even lifeguards are completely driven to distraction by fear of the boobie. And there was a Michigan Y that banned a mom from breastfeeding in the pool because, quote, you're going to love this, there's no food or water allowed in the pool area. So women are like, okay, a vending machine. I'm sorry, but you can't give milk here. That's a food, and you're a vending machine. So they're like milk dispensers. So, you know, young, tender eyes will not see the boobie or be corrupted by the boobie. And so, then, of course, sexually confused individuals are potentially aroused to life-threatening situations by the boobie. But have you really noticed that how lesbians really just don't even exist in the fundamentalist missions? They just don't exist. They're not on the radar at all, except for one huge and that is the Reverend Willie Nelson, or rather Willie Wilson, of the United Temple Baptist Church in Southeast Washington, D.C. And this is the real huge exception to lesbians sneaking under the fundamentalist radar. Agnes, please run the Reverend Willie Nelson clip for me, please. Wilson, rather.
Houston could make it. And we live in a time now, brothers have been so put down, can't get a job. A lot of the sisters making more money than brothers, and it's created problems in families. That's one of the reasons our family's breaking up, and that's one of the reasons many of our women are becoming lesbians. You got to be careful when you say you don't need no man. I can make it by myself. Well, if you don't need a man, what's left? Lesbianism about to take over our community. I'm talking about young girls. My son in high school last year trying to go to the prom. He said, Dad, I ain't got nobody to take to the prom because all the girls in my class are gay. And he, but two of them straight and both of them ugly. I ain't got nobody to take to the prom. Now, can I park here for a minute? I ain't homophobic, because everybody in here got something wrong with them. Whoever you point at, you can point at your own self, you got something wrong with your life. But when you get down to this thing, women falling down on another woman, strapping yourself up with something, it ain't real. That thing ain't got no feeling in it. It ain't natural. Anytime somebody got to slap some grease on your behind to stick something in you, there's something wrong with that. Your butt ain't made for that. You got blood vessels and membranes in your behind. And if you put something unnatural in there, it breaks them all up. No wonder your behind is bleeding. It's destroying us. Can't make no connection with a screw and another screw. Bible says God made them male and female. The Hebrew word neged, which means complementary nature. There is something unique to man and unique to woman, and it takes those two things to complement each other. You can't make a connection with two screws. It takes a screw and a nut.
Drunk again.
Song, and thank you for one of our people in the chat room set that in. That is a fabulous song, and there have been questions about the sermon that was played before that song. Reverend Willie Wilson, Israel, that was an actual from the Union Temple Baptist Church in Southeast Washington, D.C., the Belly of the Beast, and it was part of his sermon on the homosexual agenda, and yes, my darlings, it's absolutely real. That's because you lesbians are giving up that holy uterus. Lord knows y'all can't be doing that. Mm-mm. No. Mm-mm. I want to mention this. Want to do this a little story. This story has got two levels. One, I think it's sarcastic as hell. I think it's mean-spirited, I think it's sarcastic, and I think it's our ass. On the other hand, the New York Times has finally catching on to this new Surgeon General and speaking out against him. And I'll tell you about the story, and also I'll credit Michelangelo Signorelli for first noticing the sarcasm in this article, and a number of others have noticed it too. I intended to do it the other day, but didn't get to it. But the article from the New York Times is going into the Senate Health Committee. They're going to have to dig beneath the surface. I mean, you know, you don't have to dig far. What is this dig beneath the surface on the nomination of James Hollinger? Hollinger, because of quote disturbing indications that he's prejudiced against homosexuals. Do you think he is? Anyway, he's the quote the nation's top doctor is what that position is, and he's supposed to serve as the America's chief health educator. And Hollinger has been with the Department of Veteran Affairs for 26 years. He's killed countless people, and the hospital had to admit that he was at fault in many, many of those deaths. He simply, as you might imagine, did not give a damn. He was with the University of Kentucky Medical Center, and of course a Republican. He was Secretary of Health and Family Services in Kentucky. He's a Christian conservative, and the New York Times, difficult to pigeonhole ideologically. I mean, you know, he's a freaking bigot. He's got it written. Difficult to pigeonhole. What color is the sky in your world? Lord have mercy. He was also one of the lay leaders in the United Methodist Church, and when he was on the Judicial Council, boy, the Methodist Church keeps coming up. The Methodist Church, he got rid of a lesbian minister, said she should be removed because the church doctrine deems the practice to be incompatible with Christian teaching. His strongest sexuality can be found in a loosely reasoned paper, blah, 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 where it's basically a rant. He says that gay folks are abnormal and it's anatomically incorrect and that it's unhealthy and anal sex leads to rectal injuries and transmitted diseases, but he refused to go into the fact that a large number of heterosexual women also engage in anal sex. He would not label that abnormal, and he implied that women are more likely than men to avoid injuries with generous lubrication. So, honey, I don't know what kind of lubrication you women are buying, but, you know, clue us in. In any case, you know, he's a total bigot. But here's the flip side. Yes, everything they said is true. I mean, they laid it on light, like, you know, somebody have to dig under the surface and, you know, pigeonhole, it's difficult to pigeonhole. You know, that was bullshit. We all know it's bullshit. But here's where it really, really ticks me off. Okay, one, they used the word homosexual four times in the article. Now, okay, I can live with that. Homosexual is pretty damn clinical. I think the common usage is gay and lesbian these days, but okay, so you want to use the clinical term, but this is what really chaps my butt. The last line in this article, it's just the knife in the back. They say, the New York Times, the Senate should not confirm a Surgeon General who considers practicing homosexuals abnormal and diseased. Oh, you jackasses. As if gay and lesbian people are went to school to learn it, like an attorney where you hang out the shingle and you practice law, or like a doctor, you go to medical school, you learn it. It's an acquired thing, and you hang out your shingle so you can practice medicine. Hell no, honey, there's nobody in this room practicing. We got it down, baby. We nobody practicing around here, my honey. This whole thing about practicing homosexual, that is so screwed up. It reminds me of the old phrase, some of you may remember it, functioning sexuals. As if people could be so gay that they could no longer function from day to day. They would just collapse on the floor and go to into some sort of a gay hissy fit and just scream and yell and want sex or some rigmarole. So it comes from the same genre as functioning homosexual, practicing homosexual. It's condescending, it's bullshit, and the New York Times can kiss my gay ass whether or not they got Halsing here right or not. How you like that? Okay. I see the lights are still on, so I haven't been fired yet. Let me see if I can get this in. Michael Moore is going to tackle his next film. Yay! I can't wait. You know, he's, what was it? The 9/11 movie, his latest one, Sicko, the one about General Motors. Wonderful filmmaker. And plus, his movies play in real movie theaters. He's revealed that he's going to take on homophobia and the anti-gay movement in his next documentary, which is amazing to me. Says he thinks it's a ripe subject for someone like me to make a movie about. I completely agree. Just go for it. He told that in an interview to The Advocate. He says, simply because we're not there yet, it just remains one of the last open wounds in America. And this is very true. Sicko is really upset. Sicko is really upset. The healthcare system, the fundamentalists are having a hissy fit over it. Anyway, he goes into the four Gospels and Jesus not using the word homosexual. Won't go into all that. We've had three nights of very qualified religious leaders and activists in the gay community. There's no point in me going on about Jesus and the word homosexual. We've heard it from the masters. Moore says he's a spiritual person, that he supports same-sex marriage. I'm all for it, and you go for it. And another little quickie here, Facebook. Everybody's heard about Facebook. It's supposed to be the adult alternative to I sometimes call a cesspool because I get hit up by blondie-headed hoes every day. You know, I'm listed as a gay man, not interested in a relationship, just doing a radio show, thank you very much, and every blondie-headed hoe in the universe sends me pictures and solicitations with their boobies stick. Oh, the fear of the boobie. What about my fear of the boobie? Get those things out of my face. Anyway, Facebook is blocking the last name gay. It will not let you register if your last name is gay. Now, in Germany, you see, or I'm sorry, not in Germany, in Australia, actually, there are a huge number of people whose last name is gay. You know, it's from New Zealand and in areas like that, and thousands of people across Australia. Okay, so there's this. People have noticed that they're complaining about it. They can't get their names registered. One young woman had to actually use her first name and her middle name to let it register because it would come up and say, "Please enter a legitimate name." Yep. And by the way, you can register your last name as being Hitler. You could register Adolf Hitler. Oh, yes, absolutely, but you cannot be George Gay. No, 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 no. So, anyway, I love you guys. Thank you so much for being here. Wonderful evening. Be sure and check out strictlyconfidentialradio.com. There are links there to all the music. Daryl in Chicago sends music. We have Cynthia Manley sending music. We have Glenn Rivera in California. There are links to all of the shows. And, we, of course, Billy Shears, God bless him. We count on him, too. So I'll see you tomorrow night. God bless you. And here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to...
You're listening to The Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. Felix has weakened to a Category 1 hurricane after walloping Central America's Mosquito Coast as a Category 5 earlier today. A 1 is still very strong, with heavy rains and winds up to 80 miles per hour, still knocking down trees and power poles, tearing metal roofs from houses, and causing flash floods and mudslides. In the Pacific, Category 1 Hurricane Henriette came ashore at Cabo San Lucas this afternoon. A storm pumped 15-foot waves onto beaches, swung boats around on their moorings, and brought a deluge of rain to the desert peninsula. That rain is forecast to reach Arizona and New Mexico by Thursday. In Baghdad, an appeals court has upheld the death sentence for three top officials of the Saddam Hussein regime, including Saddam's cousin, Chemical Ali. The men were convicted of committing genocide against Kurds. They'll be hung within 30 days. Also in Iraq, the nation's parliament is back at work after recess. In Washington, Congress returned from its summer vacation, too. 8 Al-Qaeda-linked terrorists have been arrested in Copenhagen on suspicions of planning a bombing. The suspects had been under surveillance for quite some time. Hashemi Rafsanjani has been voted in as the head of the assembly in Iran. The assembly's primary role is to supervise and select the supreme leader. Rafsanjani was the president of Iran from 1989 to 1997. He ran again in 2005, but lost to Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. The Taliban is getting weapons from China to fight coalition forces in Afghanistan. The surface-to-air missiles and other arms have been recovered on several occasions after battles on with British and American forces. Afghan police say one of the Taliban militants behind the kidnapping of South Korean missionaries was killed today in a gunfight with U.S.-led forces. 15 other militants were killed in the battle. Famed adventurer Steve Fawcett is missing somewhere over Nevada. He took off from a ranch for a short recreational flight yesterday morning, and hasn't been seen since. The Civil Air Patrol, California Highway Patrol, the U.S. Air Force, and private search and rescue crews are scouring 600 square miles in a grid pattern, trying to locate either him or the wreckage of his small plane. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Looking to find the best in the USA? Come to Boulevards.com. We're the best address in city guides across the U.S. For the best information in travel, Boulevards.com gives you the most up-to-date choices for the best in dining, hotels, entertainment, adventure, and exciting tips to make your holiday the best it can be. Whether you're a local or just looking for great getaway tips, go to Boulevards.com and get the best. Be independent of search engines. Make your choices. We're Boulevards.com. Come visit us at SanFrancisco.com, SanJose.com, Carmel.com, WashingtonDC.com, PaloAlto.com, Seattle.com, Oakland.com, SanAntonio.com, Denver.com, and many more. We are Boulevards.com, the best in your visiting the USA. Come visit us at Boulevards.com.